Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, ESPNU, the ESPN app. Click more on the lower right-hand corner of the app. Scroll down to live radio. You are not tied to your radio or your car or anything like that if you have a phone in your pocket. And you do. You have us on the go on the ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Key, J., good morning.
What's cracking, man?
Know what's cracking?
No,
what's cracking, Jay?
What time is it? What's cracking, player?
So, I wake up this morning, and, you know, we get texts.
Did you hear with us? Of course you woke up.
We get texts throughout. Like, our job never really ends. We have Zoom meetings at 3:30 right after I get off this just in, and that's not over till 4. Then, we're back and forth all thinking ideas, tossing them around for the show. So, this morning, I don't know, probably about 4:30 in the morning, I see a text, hey, you guys were doing on the plus side today. And
which means we have to pick our underdog.
We have to pick our underdog. So I look at the NFL. I'm like, damn, a lot of buys this week. I don't like any of these underdogs. So we have an option of doing college football. And the information I was given was that Georgia at home was getting 8 points. I thought to myself,
laughable.
As you guys, but like Tennessee, I know the defense looked better recently, but that Georgia defense at home. You're going to give me 8 points whether or not they win. I'm taking that all day. No wonder I felt so good about that.
I still don't know about that.
I looked up the odds.
I still don't know about that, man.
Someone tweeted at me. Let me give this person credit. So someone tweeted at me.
Hendon Hooker in that offense is different, man.
Maybe, but you're going to give me those kind of – you're going to
give me – would you take the points? Plus 8?
No, but Max is going somewhere here, Jay. You got to let him get there. And then
he's just looking it up online, so I'm trying to
figure I'm trying to tell you the person who sent it to me. But anyway.
Well, here's the quickest way to say it. It's not plus 8, it's minus 8.
It's minus 8. They're not getting the points. Yeah. They're giving them.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Alabama's minus 8?
No. Georgia.
Tennessee
is minus 8 to Georgia.
Georgia's at home.
Max had a little misinformation at 4:30 a.m. this morning. That's all. He's trying to correct it, but you know Max is going instead of getting off at that exit.
He's made it so much more confusing.
Instead of getting off at that exit, he's going to keep going to the next exit and then come back around to get back off the exit. Yeah. So Max ain't going to take the short way.
Key, that is the best damn analogy I've heard about Max than I've ever heard before.
Justin Lewis. That's who I was looking for. Justin Lewis tweeted at me.
Rather than just say, hey, I screwed it up. It's supposed to be minus 8 and plus 8. Max is getting ready to get you a hole. He's going to find it. He goes,
chapter 3. Yeah. It was a cold day. Wait, no. Justin Lewis, who's the head coach at Houston High School, tweeted at me. Thank you, Justin. No. I appreciate that.
UGA is minus 8.
Yeah, minus 8.
You guys just said last time Tennessee is minus 8.
By the way, you're going to give me the points? I'll take
Georgia,
Tennessee. Watch
Georgia
this.
Is minus 8.
Yes.
Yeah, Georgia's
home. Yes.
Georgia's minus 8.
8-point favorites
home.
At home.
Right, okay. So instead of plus 8.
I can't talk to you about gambling.
So I'll tell you what, Shannon. Uh-huh. Change my pick. If Tennessee is getting 8 points, I'll take the 8 points for Tennessee.
So now you're taking Tennessee.
Well, because it's an 8-point. That game is a tough competitive game. Anyone you're going to give 8 points, I'm going to take the points. So
Tennessee.
Yeah, they might win.
Tennessee going to swing something on them. Georgia got a good defense, but Tennessee's offense, man, they just prolific.
All right.
They score quick.
So you guys are both taking Tennessee. You're taking Tennessee to cover, Key. Are you taking Tennessee to cover? Well, they win, they cover.
So yeah.
They're going to cover if they win, right? Ain't that what happens?
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
Of course. Christian Hot. Well, yeah, if they're underdogs.
I don't know why I asked that question.
In the middle of me asking, I realized what I was asking.
Well, because the damn spread has changed 9 times with Max, so I got confused.
With Max, one time.
Before Max moves on to baseball, he's going down the FDR. And instead of crossing over going through Soho
right
to get
now.
To the West Side Highway,
you can't
he goes all the way around through Queens and comes back around. Through the
you two still haven't stopped your car accusing me of doing that. You're driving all around everywhere saying, Max, where are you going? All right. Christian Javier and the bullpen guys in the World Series combine to no-hit for a no-hitter to no-hit the Phillies for the Astros. And this was after it looked like the Phillies had momentum and they're a Cinderella team or this year and they're the team of destiny. Javier held the Phillies in check over the first 6 innings. He threw 97 pitches. And then Brian Abreu and Rafael Montero and Ryan Presley threw one hitless inning each. Now, the only previous no-hitter in the World Series was Don Larson's famous perfect game in 1956. The only other postseason no-hitter, period, was Roy Halladay in 2010 in the NLCS. By the way, also at Citizens Bank Park against the Dusty Baker-managed Reds.
Yeah, I forgot Dusty was a manager of the Reds. How did I forget that?
Remember, he made Aroldis Chapman the closer.
Reds, Giants, Astros, and am I missing somebody?
Maybe Cubs?
Well, I was about to say, why do I feel like it was Chicago? But because it was, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, guys, here's Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager, on having to bounce back after being no hit. And you're going to hear the question, too. Listen to this.
I think it's the third time in history, right? Or second time in history. But anyway, you know, we were no hit earlier in the year in New York against the Mets. And we came back the next day and won. So these guys, they got a short memory. And they're going to go home tonight. They're going to go to bed and come back in here tomorrow and prep and compete like they always do.
Hey, Rob, even though you were on the wrong end of this, does the historical significance of it settle in?
For me? I mean, loss to loss. That's the way I kind of look at it.
So now you got...
I love when reporters ask historical significances, like in a loss.
Yeah, right.
The
guy's in the middle of a World Series.
I'm trying to win. Like, that's not even a World Series, in a game. Like, even in a regular season game, I'm like, yo, I lost. Like, what makes you think I want to stop and expound upon an historical moment in a loss? It doesn't.
Yeah, we are the ones who got no hit.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
We lost.
Yeah. Would you? I think here's part of the plan for game six for us. We'd like game five. We'd like to hit better or at all. We'd like to get some hits. So now with two of the next three games in Houston, guys, is it fair to say, Key, would you say the Astros are in control of the World Series? Not it up. They got two of the next three. This is why you got home field, right?
Not necessarily, because Philly took one in Houston. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Philly, they're afraid to go into Houston and win. Now, obviously, I'm a Dodger fan, and I don't like cheating Astros, but because Dusty Baker is the manager and he's had an opportunity to win one before and hadn't gotten it, I want to see him win it. So I've become I'm not really an Astros fan. I've become a Dusty Baker fan, clearly, but he's on the Astros, so I'm hoping that they go ahead and take advantage of the opportunity being at home the next two or three.
You notice how, like, the people around you can affect your rooting interests? Like, when it's not your team, it's hard. You can't really decide who you're rooting for. Sometimes I find myself on a plane going somewhere watching a game. I got no dog in the fight. But somehow I find myself rooting for one team or another. I couldn't even exactly tell you why, right? So going into this, though, I'd be rooting for the Phillies. I hate the Astros. They cheated the Yankees, all this stuff. But because of Pat Costello, who's a Phillies fan, I find myself, when the Phillies pull ahead, rooting for the Astros somehow.
I want the Phillies to fall because of Pat.
Right.
I want them to lose.
But why is it Pat to win?
But
wait, Alan Yates is a Phillies fan too.
He hasn't been as obnoxious about it.
Yates is not as annoying as Pat.
Yeah, but you have to support the team.
No,
you're annoying about the Dodgers. Max is obnoxious about the Yankees.
No, but
like,
no.
Support each other.
Yeah, but you can't choose to do it. Like, here's the thing. So the Astros then win now, right? Now, even though I want Pat to be unhappy about the Phillies, now I'm like, but damn, man, I really don't want the Astros to win. Now I feel like I'm rooting for the Phillies again. You know what I mean, Key? Like, I just don't want anyone to win, I guess.
I want Dusty Baker to win.
Mm-hmm.
With him winning, it means the Astros are going to win. So I'm going to take that. I'll just whatever, because the Dodgers are not in it. But at least Dusty wins it. I don't want Pat and him winning anything.
Yeah,
nothing.
Right.
Zero. I need him to be miserable.
Hate that guy,
for
Pat.
As long as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I want him so miserable, I want him to run into a wall and bump his head.
Right.
Jeez, damn,
and if Yates was chirping as much as Pat, trying to down Yankees players or Dodgers stuff, then we'd be rooting against Yates. But Yates has been pretty cool about this through the World Series.
That's because he's not really a Phillies fan.
James
is chiming in now.
I'm not an avid baseball fan, but I rock with it. My first parade was 2008 for the Phillies. We left school as a unit to go to the parade.
I think Yates was surprised that baseball was still happening up until this point.
Wait, there was a baseball game last night?
Meantime, James is, I'm a Patrick Mahomes fan, but James, if there's someone on earth who could get me to root against Patrick Mahomes, you know, unless he's playing the Giants
the
or something.
Angry Patrick.
Oh, my God.
Angry Chiefs fan.
You could be saying
time.
Something good about Patrick Mahomes, and James will jump in. Yeah, but rah, 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 like you
I'm
said
just,
something bad about him.
I'm just
like, oh, well, Josh Allen, look, of course he looked good. He looks good in the regular season.
The
true.
World Series.
It's a great point. Jay.
The World Series is on ESPN Radio, presented by AutoZone. Catch all the Game 5 action tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Oh, oh, oh. You know what that means. Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN NFL draft expert. What is going on, Mel?
Mel, hey, guys, it's going to be a fun weekend. A lot of prospects on display. I'm here, guys, but it's going to be a lot of fun this weekend watching Tennessee and Georgia with all those great prospects on the field.
You have Bryce Young as your third quarterback on the big board. Why is he third, Mel?
You know, it's really a three guys all bunched together. There's no really gap between the three. I put them all right there together. We're still early November. Got a long way to early April when I have to make the final call on who's QB 1, 2, and 3. But, you know, Bryce Young's 5'11 and a half with 185. Yeah. So we haven't had a quarterback small in stature go this high. But when you look at those three right now, it's too close to call. Will Levis, C.J. Stroud, and Bryce Young all in the similar category grade-wise. And then you have Jalen Carter, defensive tackle, George, and Will Anderson Jr., outside linebacker, Alabama, slightly ahead.
Mel, why do I feel like Will Levis is a little more, and I know it's early, and we haven't broken down all the film, mm-hmm. and we haven't gotten into the offseason and all those sort of things, but why do I feel like he's a little more pushed up than he should be? Just watching him against Tennessee, I walked away from that game saying there's no way he's a top three quarterback.
You can't worry about games in college, Key. I've found that I've always brought up Dante Culpepper against Auburn, Josh Allen against Iowa, Ben Roethlisberger against Iowa, Peyton Manning losing three games to Florida, Troy Aikman not beating Rodney Peete. College games are great, but it's not about the NFL. And it's not to define Will Levis. Will Levis against Mississippi State threw a pick six to Manuel Forbes, came back next drive, took him down to win the game, get it to score. In this game, they were just outclassed, outmanned. And that happened to Tennessee. They're a hot team. They got the best of them. Will Levis has been beat up all year. And, of course, he battled through a lot. But he's in an NFL system. He's got a big-time arm. He snaps it off, and he's mobile. So I think at the end of the day, Will Levis could very easily be the number one pick overall.
Mel, if things continue to go south for the Pittsburgh Steelers with Kenny Pickett, and they end up having one of those top picks where they could draft, you know, one of these top QBs, do you think they should consider doing it?
No. Kenny Pickett's 24. He's played through adversity now. This team needs some help on the O-line. They got, obviously, holes to fill. And Kenny Pickett, if you draft him, what do you know now that you're not – or what are you going to know at the end of the year that's going to determine whether you go another direction? You're not going to know enough. You know internally what he's capable of. On the field, you're going to see the inconsistency. He's a rookie quarterback. I don't care if he's 24, 28, 21. He's still a rookie in the National Football League despite all those games he played at Pitt. So for me, yes, they drafted Kenny Pickett because they really like him. He's shown flashes. Obviously, he's going to struggle, but right now I think you move forward with Kenny Pickett and you pass on the quarterbacks and you try to fill one of those two or three key holes they have.
On your big board right now, you have Bijan Robinson out of Texas, the running back, the first running back off the board in the top 10. Many people over the years, Mel, as you has astutely said, it doesn't really matter, will shy away from taking a running back so high. Why do you have him in the top 10?
Well, you grade players based on ability, not on philosophy, Key. So I would never take a running back in the first round unless you had to have that guy late in the first and the head coach wants him and you got to have him. That's fine. Late in the first round, maybe, but probably not for me. I would fight it tooth and nail. But you grade him on ability. And Bijan Robinson's a great running back. He can do it all. And to me, he's going to go probably in the top 10. Would I take him? My philosophy is don't draft a running back in round one. But I'm not going to grade him as the 40th player because of philosophy. On ability, guys, he's a top 10 player, no question about it.
Go ahead, Max.
No,
I was going to say you have four wide receivers in the top 25. How close are these guys? Jordan Addison, obviously, high from Tennessee. And then I can't say the last name. The Jagbu from Ohio State. Then obviously Johnston from TCU. How far of a separation are these guys?
Not a lot, Key. Jordan Addison, we saw him at Pitt, what he did with Kenny Pickett. We see him now with Caleb Williams, obviously injured as well. But you think about Jackson Smith and Jigba. You mentioned him from Ohio State. He's been hurt all year. So I'm not being like, well, is that going to hurt him in the draft? He's been injured. You know, it's not going to kill him in the draft. He's still a first-round caliber player. He was right there with Olave and Garrett Wilson lighting it up. So for me, Jackson Smith and Jigba's only not higher because of the injury. Quentin Johnston has come on. He's got the physicality to be a high pick, no question about that. So I think when you look at these receivers and you say, okay, how many will go in the first round? Jalin Hyatt right now is a guy I'd put there. People say, where did he come from? Watch Tennessee play with Hendon Hooker, and you see a guy who's got incredible speed, has dominated in every game. Nobody can cover this guy. Now, Brew McCoy helps out, the USC transfer. They're getting Cedric Tillman back last week. He's had a real good start till he was injured. But I think Jalin Hyatt, when he runs and he tests out, in addition to the productivity, he's going to be way up there.
What players should we keep our eye on, Mel, that could climb up your big board before the season's over?
Well, I think when you look at the O-line, Broderick Jones, the offensive tackle from Georgia, going to see him against Tennessee. Byron Jones, you talk about coming off the edge. Byron Young is a guy, pass rusher from Tennessee. You got Broderick Jones from Georgia. So he's a guy that I think could climb because we're still looking for that elite tackle. Paris Johnson Jr. at Ohio State. You got Peter Skoronski at Northwestern, could be a guard. I think Broderick Jones, this Tennessee game, will tell us a lot about that. And then you think about the wide receiver position. Like I said, you got a lot of guys trying to climb up there. And you got those slot guys that are really good, Zay Flowers at Boston College and Josh Downs at North Carolina. But I think they've got the size and the physicality of a Quentin Johnston from TCU with Max Duggan really emerging. Quentin Johnston's the guy, Max, that could rise up. I said talk about wide receiver one, who's going to be the first one off the board. Quentin Johnston, once he tests, and if he keeps putting those numbers up, he's going to be certainly in that mix.
Okay, Mel, I just wrote that note down. I'm paying attention. I always know each and every year there are quarterbacks that we fall in love with. In particular this year, there's some stud quarterbacks out there. But Will Anderson of Alabama is a stud too. You have him at the top of your big board. Would you take him over any of the top QBs?
If you need a quarterback, Jay, you take the quarterback, okay, over either Jalen Carter from Georgia, who I think could be ahead of Will Anderson by the time we get to late April in terms of the defensive line and the prospects other than quarterbacks. But I think you take the quarterback if you need the quarterback over Will Anderson Jr. I love the kid. Love everything about him. But Tennessee neutralized him. We'll see what happens coming down in these bigger games as we move forward. These huge games that obviously are going to determine a lot moving forward. But you look at Will Anderson Jr., he's not Myles Garrett. He's not Von Miller. He doesn't have that explosiveness, doesn't have that bend. Is he a heck of a player? He's going to have a really nice career in the NFL? Yes. Is he special like those guys were coming off and unique? No, he's not. So I think it's going to be the quarterbacks that go high. They could go 1, 2, 3. I think Jalen Carter could go ahead of Will Anderson Jr. by the time we get to late April. So is he a heck of a player? Yes. Is he guaranteed to be the number one pick overall or number two pick overall? No, he is not.
Mel, evaluating these college players is always tough. I did several years with you on the draft in trying to figure who goes where and what and all these sort of things. Having the evaluation of Zach Wilson a year ago and watching him come out of BYU and looking at some of the things that he did in college, I didn't think he was worthy of the number two pick. I think the New York Jets reach for him at that particular time. I thought that maybe you do a Justin Fields in that situation. That didn't happen. Is he still a franchise quarterback for the New York Jets, or is it too early to even get be able to tell what he is?
Still early. He's going through that growth, and not having Vera Tucker now and not having Breece Hall is going to affect him. There's no question about it. He's got to stay himself, obviously, making unwarranted throws. They're trying to drill into him, hey, protect the football. That's the key to the National Football League. They always say, you know, win games, you'll lose them. And he's creating some losses there with his bad decision-making. But, you know, we saw Josh Allen do some things, throwing across the field, making some questionable throws. He's still very young. And unfortunately, with Vera Tucker and Breece Hall not there, that affects him. But I think it's still too early to say he's not a franchise quarterback. Obviously, this Buffalo game this week's going to be huge to see. Can they compete at least? Can they compete with Buffalo? And can he hold his own? Does he look overmatched there against Leslie Frazier's defense, against Josh Allen on that same field? So I think the jury's still out, obviously, on a guy like Zach Wilson. I'm with you. I would have taken Justin Fields. He was my second highest rated quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence that year.
So however you have him rated, you obviously you get more information. You know, at the time, you get more information since then, Mel, right? If you had to redraft the top five quarterbacks out of that class, how would you have them?
I'd still have Lawrence 1 and Fields 2. I think they're right there. I think you look at where we don't know Trey Lance yet, obviously, with the injury. We'll see what he's kind of always was the wild card coming out of North Dakota State, not playing. Only had that 1 year, that final campaign against Central Arkansas. He was always kind of the X factor quarterback that we didn't know what he would be. And he was a guy you take a chance on based on the talent and the potential. Mac Jones, solid. We knew what he would be. He'd be okay, decent to good in that area. But I think I'd still have a Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields 1-2.
And what about Zach Wilson and Trey Lance? You'd have, would like, where was Trey Lance fall? 3, Zach Wilson 4, Mac Jones 5, like that?
Yeah, that's what you basically have to live by what you had, Max. You can't adjust it on the fly. You could say, well, would I adjust it much now based on so early in their careers? And they're what they're dealing with there. New England with the offensive talent around Mac Jones, and now they bring in Zappe. Think about what Justin Fields is dealing with in Chicago. Not a lot of talent around him. They just added the receiver. Yeah, Trevor's going through some growing pains as well. He really hasn't. To me, I guess he's been the disappointment up until this point. I thought we would see Trevor Lawrence take his game to a higher level than he has right now. I thought we would see him really become a guy we were excited about. And I don't feel that way right now about Trevor Lawrence. I thought he would be one of those guys that want to have my all-time highest grades with quarterbacks, one of the top 4, top 5. I thought he would be better right now than he is. So if you say who's the most disappointing, it would be Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, Justin Fields, a lot of people say he's exceeded expectations. For Key and I, he has not. We had him the second highest rated quarterback.
Yeah, and Mel, when we talk about Justin Fields or Ohio State quarterbacks, for instance, they come out every single year and they get pushed down and negativity comes out about their reading of the defenses and this and that. We always hear about it. Does C.J. Stroud, will he get some of that, you think? Will he fall into that category?
I think Justin Fields is going to help him. People say, well, look at those Ohio State. Well, look at Justin Fields. He's adapting. He's out there athletically making plays, you know, creating when nothing's there, showing the talent to say, I'm the best quarterback in that class. Some feel right now he is right now, based on what we see on the field. The best quarterback coming out that year was Justin Fields. So C.J. Stroud to me, and we've seen Stroud, Young, and Levis all bounce back from bad things happening to them on the field. Throw a pick, no big deal. They got a short memory. All three are big time. Obviously, when you think about Ohio State, Marvin Harrison Jr. is spectacular. When Smith and Jigba gets healthy, Abuka, they got all kinds of Fleming. They got all these receivers. They got the running game. They got the O-line with Weipler at center and Johnson and DeJuan Jones and Matthew Jones. They're loaded around them. I get all that, but it's the quarterback's fault that there's so much talent around them? Is it the quarterback's fault? Is it Ohio State's going to win all the time? No, but I think Fields' development will help C.J. Stroud. If the Fields wasn't showing promise, that's what they would say. Oh, we got to move C.J. Stroud down. Nobody's going to say that now because of Justin Fields.
That is Mel Kiper Jr., ladies and gentlemen, ESPN NFL draft expert, of course. Mel, great to hear from you as always.
Yeah, Mel right, tricked him for me.
A lot of fun, guys. Enjoy the weekend, guys. It's going to be fun.
You all too. Right. Tune in for college football action Saturday night as LSU hosts Alabama, presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. So, after getting no hit in Game 4, what should we expect from the Phillies in Game 5? Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio.
Listen to Keyshawn, J. Will and Max live everywhere you are. Download the ESPN app. Tap the More tab on the bottom right. Scroll down and tap Live Radio. ESPN Radio, everywhere you are.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
And the pitch, a swing and a miss, a fastball up, and Christian Javier strikes out the side. And it's strike three called, a fastball at the knees, and that is five consecutive strikeouts for Christian Javier. And the 3-2 is swung on and hit to short. Pena up with it, and that is six hitless innings for Christian Javier.
You know, he was electric. He threw the ball up, down, and that shows you that the best pitch in baseball is still a well-located fastball.
Keyshawn, J. Willimax on ESPN Radio. Game 5 in Philly will be a hot ticket tonight. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seat Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Buster Olney, ESPN MLB insider and host of Baseball Tonight podcast. What it is right now, Buster?
What's going on, guys?
So the thing about baseball, Buster, is – and you often hear this in baseball circles, right? Now, there are 30 franchises, 162 games a year. It's been going on for 120 plus years. And yet you constantly see things you've never seen before, right? Somehow. The Astros combined to no-hit the Phillies last night. What was it like witnessing World Series history?
It was a complete shocker after what we saw in Game 3, where the Phillies hit all those home runs and the crowd completely took over the place. And I must say that, yes, a combined no-hitter is not the same as one person throwing a no-hitter. You know, it's not the same as what Roy Halladay did here a decade ago. You know, for me, you know, having seen no-hitters by David Wells and David Cone and Jake Arrieta, it's just a different feat. But the pitching domination of the Phillies lineup from beginning to end by the Astros pitcher, starting with Christian Javier, was the most dominant performance I've ever seen. There was no chance for the Phillies hitters. You know, in every no-hitter, it always seems like there's one or two plays that are made, you know, an outfielder running a ball down the gap, a shortstop making a great play. Guys, there was nothing. There was no chance. And to see the Phillies lineup go from this team that just seemed to be unstoppable the night before, hitting the ball in the seats, to being completely helpless against that Houston pitching last night was remarkable.
Buster, you just talked about the pitching last night and the way that they pitched a no-hitter from the bullpen down to Javier. But let's just focus in on Javier for those six innings. How amazing was the six innings? How great was he for those six innings?
He was in complete command. You know, before the game, Dusty Baker talked about how Javier has what he referred to again and again as an invisible fastball. Because, guys, you know, he throws 93, 94 miles per hour in this era. That feels really pedestrian. You know, ranked 30th out of 72 starters with at least 140 innings. But because of the nature of his delivery, it was clear that hitters just don't pick up the ball. And during the game, I was texting back and forth with a couple of managers in the big leagues and saying, why is it that hitters can't see the ball? And they talked about how his tempo of his delivery, how he's so slow at the outset, so calm, under control. And then halfway through his delivery, his arm just explodes as he releases the ball toward home plate. And he's got a bit of a crossfire thing going on, where he's set up on the first side of the rubber. Hitters don't really pick up the ball, you know, at the outset or even after it heads toward home plate, which is why even when they make contact, it's always late. It's why you saw so many pop-ups last night. They just can't see the ball. And most of the time when he threw the ball at the top of the strike zone, they were swinging underneath it. And he was striking everybody out or getting a lot of weak contact.
We are joined by ESPN MLB insider and host of Baseball Tonight's podcast, Buster Olney, here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Buster, is it safe to say that, you know, in sports, you never get too high, you never get too low, especially when you're in a championship series like this. But considering the shutout last night and with Justin Verlander on the mound for game five, is it safe to say that the Astros have the momentum heading into the next game?
You know, it's interesting. I asked Christian Vasquez that very question, Jay, after the game. You know, he last night became the first catcher to catch a no-hitter since Yogi Berra in 1956. Mm. And I could just see the look in his face as they asked the question where he was like, yeah, Dork, okay, there ain't no momentum in this World Series. You know, he did the veteran look like, I'm not going to answer that question, because the night before – We saw that incredible, you know, the strength of the Phillies and the Citizens Bank Park, and that totally was stopped last night. And tonight, you know, with a couple swings of bat, maybe it starts to go back the other way. And you know, look, I've covered a lot of different types of sports. Baseball players, I feel like, turn the page as well as anybody, which is why last night when Kyle Schwarber was asked by reporters about, you guys, you know, the historic nature of this. You're the second team to be no-hit in the World Series. And Kyle's response, and he is as down-to-earth and as genuine as anybody I've covered in baseball, looked at the reporter and said, I don't give a crap. You know, it's like, that's just how players think. So I think right now there's no momentum. I do think among all the players in this game tonight, there's more pressure on Justin Verlander than anybody, because he's a, you know, a absolute lock, first ballot Hall of Famer, and he has this difficult, you know, tough, ugly history in the World Series, and so I think he's going to be having a lot on his shoulders as he takes the mound tonight.
Buster, I got about 60 seconds. I want to ask you this question because I got a different feeling on it. If the Phillies win the World Series, is Bryce Harper the new face of baseball?
Either he or Shohei Ohtani, Key. I think, you know, Ohtani because of the unusual nature of what he does. But Bryce has ascended to now a place with his performance in this postseason that I think everyone was projecting for him when he's 15, 16, 17 years old, with the absolute domination. And you can tell by the way that he's handling it. It feels like that, you know, he's put everything together and he is now where he believes that he could get to, and you know, where he feels like he should be.
Buster Olney, ESPN MLB insider, host of Baseball Tonight podcast. Thank you, Buster, as always.
All right, Max. Thanks, guys.
All right, Buster.
By the way, not just us, guys. People, is Bryce Harper, this is the stage. Is he the new face of baseball? The World Series, or finally, is he the face of baseball, is on ESPN Radio. Catch Game 5 tonight. Will the face of baseball hit another home run? 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. Coming up, Dan Snyder has hired a firm to consider potential Commanders sale. Should the NFL use the opportunity to make a push to have an African-American majority owner in Washington?
From your radio to your smart speaker and phone.
Now playing ESPN Radio.
Or watch on ESPN2. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Live weekday morning starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Jay, Kyrie Irving and the Nets pledge each $500,000 to end to anti-hate causes. Do we have that quote, Shannon, that we could put up on the screen? I'll read it for you. I got to tell you, before I read the quote, Jay, Kyrie, I need an apology, right? I don't know why exactly he posted what he posted, but if you take responsibility for it, say, hey, this is where I'm coming from. I did not mean to offend people and hurt anybody. I am now, because of that, going to give you $500,000 and have the team match it. Listen to this. Here's the quote. As part of a joint statement with the Nets and the Anti-Defamation League, Kyrie took responsibility for the, quote, negative impact his controversial social media post has had toward the Jewish community and said he opposes, quote, all forms of hatred and oppression. The statement came 6 days after Irving tweeted about a book and movie that featured anti-Semitic tropes. Four days after he defended that post in a news conference with media. Quote, I do not believe everything said in the documentary was true or reflects my morals and principles, he said in a statement. In addition to the financial pledge, Kyrie and the Nets said they will work with the ADL that's the Anti-Defamation League, a civil rights organization, quote, in an effort to develop educational programming that is inclusive and will comprehensively combat all forms of anti-Semitism and bigotry, end quote. So, Jay.
I think it's important for me to get your opinion on this first, Max. Because you're Jewish, I would like to hear your opinion.
Sure,
first.
I'll tell you. You turn the page now. He, you know, basically what that umbrella statement means is like, look, what maybe I didn't vet it closely enough. Maybe there are things in it that I like, but given the overall nature of the beast, I should have left it alone. Whatever it is, let me just say an overarching thing. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't have anything against anybody as a group. I don't like hate speech. I want people to be tolerant. As long as that's where you're coming from, I'm good. On top of that, they're giving $1 million to like aid, you know, in the cause. I'm good. It's time to turn the page now. That's how I feel about it. And he says I take responsibility. I don't know what else. You can't go build a time machine and undo something. This is what you can do.
Yeah, I like the quote. I think he said the right thing. I wish he would have said it sooner, frankly, because I frankly knew that was his intention. Mm-hmm. Like, I got the gist of what he was doing for. There's still some more to unpack there. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that the next additional content. How about that, Max?
Well. And by the way, not only is there more to unpack there, I'm sure, but then you just got to wait for the next controversy to come down the pike, right?
Listen to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max live everywhere you are. Download the ESPN app. Tap the More tab on the bottom right. Scroll down and tap Live Radio. ESPN Radio. Everywhere you are.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Guys, Daniel Snyder has hired a firm to consider a potential sale of his Washington football team, now called the Commanders. They are worth an estimated $5.6 billion, according to Forbes, figure that ranks sixth among the NFL's 32 teams. By the way, Key and Jay, and we all know this. Whenever Forbes says the valuation of a team, it's always more than that, right? Forbes will say, oh, this team is worth $3 billion. They sell for $5 billion, right? So if Forbes is pinning $5.6 billion or estimating, I'm assuming it's minimum $6 billion franchise at any rate.
Yeah, when they're doing the evaluation on it, I'm wondering if they're putting this new stadium in? Probably not. Probably not, right? So if they're not putting a new stadium attached to that, that number certainly goes up because they're going to get a new stadium somewhere in the area.
Remember when the Clippers, Key, were valued at like $1 billion and sold for $2.5 billion, something like
that,
right?
Yeah, he overpaid, though.
Yeah,
he
okay.
overpaid. No, no, he just, I mean, he got, Ballmer had the money, so he just said, here, take it.
Yeah, maybe at a certain number, not every, you know, you start to whittle the pool down of potential buyers.
If this is, what do you say, 5.6? This will be a $6.5 to $7
right,
billion
that's what
dollar
I'm figuring
sale.
Too. According to ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr., the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia opened a criminal investigation into allegations that the Commanders engaged in financial improprieties, a probe that was triggered by a letter to the House Committee on Oversight and Reform sent to the Federal Trade Commission and several attorneys general in April that alleged deceptive business practices by the team, sources said. Guys, should the NFL use this whole thing as an opportunity to make a push to have a black majority owner, an African-American majority owner in Washington?
Jay, you was going to say something.
Well, I was going to say something quick before we got into that. I was just going to say the NFL is the best investment of all time, man. In any other public sector, dog, Key, like you do something absurd, like your stock value goes down, you lose money. Like the NFL and the NBA are like places where like these guys.
This is really not a public sector, though.
They're a private sector, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's one of the only places where you get rewarded for being an idiot.
Because you have to, you're forced to sell your property, but at market value.
For all the things that have been done, like that Daniel Snyder has done or encouraged or enabled, he's getting rewards.
Well, he was rich when he bought him.
You mean he's
richer
sports.
Now because of it.
You what?
I'm saying you mean professional sports in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just the NFL, because look at what's going on in Phoenix.
Robert Sarver, yeah. Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling, yeah. But the whole point of it is you invest the money early. It only grows. At least in our time of living, no league, the three big leagues suffer, right? They all, whether it's Major League Baseball, basketball,
make money
NFL,
when you sell your team.
They continue to grow. You make money when you sell
and
your team.
And this is still America. Pardon. This is still America, and you can't have you're not supposed to have your property confiscated without compensation.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Look, here's what I would say. The initial question by Max was, should the NFL take this opportunity to look at a majority African-American black owner running the thing, not just a guy who gives him a little chips, gets a box seats and gets some tickets to the game and stand on the sideline, shake some hands, take some pictures and get a Super Bowl ring and get to fly first class on the plane. No, we're not looking for that. We're looking to run the whole thing. The buck stops here is what we're looking for. We thought maybe we had an opportunity in Denver. That didn't go over well. Many years ago, we thought we would have an opportunity in Minnesota. That didn't go well. And there's been a couple other cases along the way. I think this is a perfect opportunity. It fits. The city fits. The demographics fit. All of what we've gone through fit. And we actually have people in the African-American community, may not have the $7 billion that it might take to just stroke one check like the Waltons or stroke one check like Stan Kroenke. We may not have that. But other owners have purchased teams along the way through all sorts of programs and partnerships with other minority owners that have given them the opportunity to own a team and become the majority, but they aren't black. So now it's time for the NFL and Roger Goodell and company and the other 31 owners to say, you know what? It's that time. And this is the perfect situation. It really, truly is. And I hope that they really dive into it with that type of mindset.
Should the NFL use this opportunity to make a push to have a black majority owner in Washington? You're damn right they should, but they won't. They won't. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, I don't
Let's
know
be
that
real,
they won't,
Key.
Jay.
There won't
I don't
be
know
an,
that they won't.
Key, there won't be an internal push to have.
No, I can't say that.
I'm going to say it. You may not be able to say it. I'm going to say it. I do think there are people that are more liquid that will be in place that they will see that will be additive for the business of the NFL, in particular Jeff Bezos or someone like that, more so than having an initiative to bring in somebody who is African-American. Let's just call it for what it is. Now, if they do, Key, I will stand up on our show. I will applaud the NFL. I will applaud them for actually standing by creating opportunities for a more diverse ownership.
Well,
but if you're asking me the probability of me thinking it happened, I think it's zero.
Well, it's really the Snyder family who it starts with, right?
Okay.
Because it's their team. Mm-hmm. And they have to accept somebody's proposal and then take it to management council or the council with the NFL and the owners that sign off on somebody being approved. I do believe, though, because of the awareness that's out there now, even more now, and you have people like Magic Johnson looking at getting a piece of the Las Vegas Raiders right now. You have Byron Allen.
A piece.
Well, no, because the Raiders aren't for sale.
Yeah, I understand.
But I'm saying he's looking at getting a piece. So what I was going to say is you have somebody like Byron Allen who had an opportunity to try to go get the Denver Broncos, but whatever happened in Denver, he wound up not getting it. They didn't accept his bid. When you got people actively trying to do it, I think it's a little bit of a different day now than it might have been several months ago, several years ago. Because of the awareness,
I think it is optically, internally, in some of those rooms with those big boy billionaire clubs. I don't think it is.
And I think it's also the right, what they perceive as the right billionaire money coming in from the black community. What they perceive as the right black person with billionaire money. Because we can get some of our entertainment and our hip hop people together, but they don't want that.
This issue highlights the economic inequity in this country based on the country's original sin. There's no quick fix here. The fact is that poverty is disproportionate in this country. There are fewer, even as a percentage of the population, black billionaires, etc. Because forget about the moral crime. But the economic crime has never been truly redressed, right? It's never been repaired. There've never been reparations. Yeah,
they can't make that decision based on that.
That's a much, much bigger issue than the NFL. But what the NFL can do is contribute in some small way by pushing for an African American majority owner in this case. And time will tell. We'll see if they do. Jets or Giants. Which organization is better set up?
From your radio to your smart speaker and phone.
Now playing ESPN Radio.
Or watch on ESPN2. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Live weekday morning starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.